Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Well, good evening. Happy Easter and welcome to the John Whitmer Show. Thrilled to have you with us this evening. I hope you had a happy, joyful, and grateful Easter weekend. Thrilled to have you with us this evening at your local liberal resistance headquarters. Thrilled to have you with us. We've got an interesting show scheduled tonight. Not as many guests as usual. Harder to get guests on an Easter weekend, but that's okay. We've got a couple of them lined up. And we'll have a lot of conversation, which is always fun. If you'd like to call in, our studio lines are open. They'll be open all throughout the show tonight at 316-869-1330. You can also reach me by email at john@knssradio.com, on Facebook at The John Whitmer Show, and on X at John R. Whitmer. Reach out. We'd love to hear from you. As I mentioned, yeah, it's going to be kind of a different format tonight. We'll do a lot of talking and take a lot of phone calls. We're going to replay my exclusive interview with Riley Gaines. I had a number of people who didn't catch it when we aired it a couple weeks ago. She was in Lawrence, and so we'll kick off our 8 o'clock hour by replaying that. Writer, speaker, and political commentator Teddy Pierce will be with us later next hour to share the shocking results of a new poll that has discovered that a majority of Americans identifying as left of center politically believe that murdering President Trump would be justified. I explained that one to me. And John Comerford, executive director of the National Rifle Association Institute for Legislative Action, will walk us through the latest Second Amendment legislation working its way through Congress. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls at 316-869-1330. We'll take those all throughout the show tonight. So feel free, reach out. Would love to hear from you. And, again, I hope you had a happy and blessed Easter weekend. And that's kind of the topic of tonight's introductory monologue. If voters ever needed proof of the cultural and spiritual importance of what's at stake in a presidential election, they need look no further than Easter. This year, President Donald Trump began the celebration of the Holy Week, these days leading up to the annual remembrance of Jesus Christ's resurrection from the dead, by issuing a remarkably erudite and theologically precise presidential message on Palm Sunday. And he followed that up with a recognition of the Easter holiday with a very poignant Easter message. Just 1 year ago, I remind you, President Joe Biden rang in Easter by urging Americans to celebrate the Transgender Day of Visibility. That's the contrast. We've seen this already come up. Joe Biden said there was nothing a president could do about the border. Well, look at what Donald Trump has done in less than 100 days. But look no more than a year ago on Easter Sunday and see the difference an election can make. Joe Biden honored Easter Sunday by recognizing Transgender Day of Visibility. Donald Trump commemorates Easter Sunday by commemorating what Easter Sunday really means. President Trump's Holy Week message was very telling. The president wrote, quote, "In his final hours on earth, Christ willingly endured excruciating pain, torture, and execution on the cross out of a deep and abiding love for all his creation. Through his suffering, we have redemption. Through his death, we are forgiven of our sins. Through his resurrection, we have hope of eternal life. The president went on to write, quote, on Easter morning, the stone is rolled away, the tomb is empty, and light prevails over darkness, signaling that death does not have the final word. Joe Biden celebrated this day a year ago with Transgender Day of Visibility. Donald Trump's message today continued just one public act celebrating the religious faith of America's maligned majority. By posting on True Social, he said, in that moment of his resurrection, history was forever changed with the promise of everlasting life. Indeed, the second Trump administration's White House Faith Office put together an extraordinary week-long celebration for Holy Week, declared Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt, who recently appeared in a candid social media video capturing her praying before a White House press briefing. Now compare this Holy Week under the second Trump administration to the Biden-Harris administration and what they did, and their decision to divert the nation's collective attention away from Easter Sunday and direct it toward Transgender Day of Visibility, one of the endless string of LGBTQ holidays. When we were getting ready to celebrate Pride Month, keep in mind, veterans get a day. Pride gets a month. Transgender Day of Visibility last year fell on Easter, March 31st. This year, President Trump posted his statements on Palm Sunday to celebrate all the sacred events of Holy Week. Last year, Biden's White House released a high-profile statement on the Trans Day of Visibility on Good Friday, so Americans could revel in the celebration all week long, celebrating perversion. Biden rolled out his last statement on Easter Sunday itself. In both timing and substance, the Biden administration clearly saw Easter as an afterthought and chose instead to advance the LGBTQ agenda. The Easter statement released by President Biden, or whoever controlled his auto pen for that matter, amounted to six sentences featuring references to the power of hope and the blessing of the dawn of new possibilities and some bunnies and eggs and things. But in his 2024 Trans Day of Visibility proclamation, he had six paragraphs containing 675% as many words as his Easter statement. Shows you his priorities, again, or the auto pen's priorities. Biden commented about extremists attempting to prevent the transgender industry from carrying out its cross-sex hormone injections and surgeries on transgender kids and American values, as if that's what America values. The overheated rhetoric actually constituted a step down from 2023 when Biden issued a statement in a fact sheet and a presidential proclamation that declared, quote, transgender Americans shape our nation's soul, which at the time was true, but not the way Biden implied. Joe Biden spent 4 years encouraging gender confusion, hosting trans-identifying influencers, one of whom flashed his fake breasts at the White House, and promoting outright heresy by implying God approves of transgenderism. Biden told trans-identifying young people that their artificial gender identity is made in the image of God, unquote. President Trump, by contrast, in his most recent speech to a joint session of Congress, responded, our message to every child in America is that you are perfect, exactly the way God made you. So, folks, this week's changed tone proves that elections do indeed have consequences. Trump's Truth Social message is a perfect example. Quote, we need God. We want God, and with his help, we will make our nation stronger, safer, greater, more prosperous, and more united than ever before. Elections do indeed have consequences, folks, and this weekend is a perfect example. We'll take a quick break, and then John Comerford, Executive Director of the National Rifle Association Institute for Legislative Action, will walk us through the latest Second Amendment legislation working its way through Congress. You're listening to The John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Dana Lash, that's an appropriate intro for my next guest. So is this song, by the way. Nicely done, Phil. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. If you're looking to get involved, we've got elections coming up, a primary, the filing deadline, not too many months away at this point. If you're still kind of figuring out where to get involved, how to get involved, I recommend that you look up my friends at Americans for Prosperity. They're always focused on helping out candidates and helping folks find a way to make their voices heard. You can visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up today. And of course, while you're online, check out the John Whitmer Show social media pages of Facebook, True Social. And you can find me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, last month, the House Judiciary Committee held a legislative markup for H.R. 38, the Constitutional Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act. The bill, introduced by Congressman Richard Hudson out of North Carolina, would empower concealed carry permit owners in one state to have their permits recognized in every state. The bill, which is a huge priority for the National Rifle Association, would significantly expand Second Amendment rights nationwide. With us now is John Comerford. He is the executive director of the National Rifle Association Institute for Legislative Action. Buddy and I used to work together when I was in the legislature. John, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you back on the show again, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Did I describe that the bill correctly? Is that that's basically what they're looking for here is to eliminate the confusing nature of concealed carry, you know, laws and reciprocity across all states, make it uniform, essentially.
You're exactly right. It would end the current practice of being able to defend yourself in one state and then crossing a simple state line and not being able to defend yourself. And we know the usual suspects, right? California, New York, New Jersey, Maryland, Massachusetts, those types of states. So it would expand those rights nationwide.
Well, and that is one of the things that I've always felt was confusing is, you know, my ability, like you said, my ability to defend myself shouldn't end at the state line just because, you know, I crossed over from obviously Kansas, Missouri is not the issue, but the further, you know, if you go to Illinois, you need to have it. If you're going into Illinois, certain parts of it for sure. Heck, sure, certain parts of East St. Louis. And, you know, it puts a burden on the carrier if they don't understand how complicated, depending on what state you're traveling into. It'd be nice if they could at least rely on their permit from their home state that protects them.
That's exactly right. And, you know, when you look at the level of severity that the criminal penalty brings for violating this in some states, there's no other law in the books that carries that level of time behind bars. If you go from Pennsylvania, which has over 1.2 million permit holders, they don't have mandatory training. You know, they trust their residents, and it's been an overwhelming success there. But if you cross the Delaware River into New Jersey, you can face up to a three-year mandatory minimum prison sentence for lawful conduct in Pennsylvania that's unlawful in New Jersey. And it's just unacceptable. NRA's done a great job nationwide of working with other partners, with great pro-gun lawmakers to get 29 states with constitutional carry. So we have a majority of the country that essentially lives under this standard already with zero issues and, in fact, decrease in crime rates. But yet the problem child states and these states that are petri dishes for bad ideas, they continue to not respect constitutional rights, and we need to fix that.
Well, and, you know, it really, somebody could, this isn't, again, we're not talking about the criminals here. The criminals don't respect the laws, irregardless. That's why I've always said that no matter how many gun laws or red flag laws or all the other nonsense that you pass, it's not going to stop the criminals because they don't respect the laws. But a guy who's just, you know, running across the state line because he's out to buy lottery tickets or whatever shouldn't be punished because he's just trying to, you know, again, run errands or something like that. And your example there, the Delaware River, is a perfect example. Or maybe you're in Kansas and you go across the line because you can't do sports betting. And you I mean, sure. it's kind of asinine when you look at it. Another bill that has been introduced and I wanted to ask you about was the Firearm Due Process Protection Act, which provides legal recourse for law-abiding Americans who were improperly denied the ability to legally purchase a firearm due to, you know, administrative errors or background checks or something like that. This is another, it's one of those backdoor tactics that some of these gun control nuts are trying to use. I'm curious where that one is.
So that moved out of committee as well. So Chairman Jordan held a markup in his committee and moved that bill along with H.R. 38 out. Both are can now move on to the next step, which leads to a floor vote and then hopefully to the Senate. And I know President Trump has his Sharpie ready to sign legislation like this into law and has asked for leadership to get it to his desk. But, you know, Whip Tom Emmer is the author of this bill. And it's basically people who have been denied that ability to purchase a firearm due to simple administrative errors during a background check. So it can fix that for them. I mean, like I said, I always use an example. If your name's John Smith and you don't list your Social Security number, you try to buy a gun at Cabela's on Black Friday. Let me know how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's a perfect example. This isn't somebody who had a convicted felon or someone who's in the country illegally. This is just a clerical error that has prevented that, and that's the kind of stuff that should be an easy fix, and yet it's prohibiting them from exercising their Second Amendment rights. We're talking with John Comerford, who's the executive director of the National Rifle Association Institute for Legislative Action. Let me kind of look a little bit in a different direction. The Department of Justice has a newly formed Second Amendment Enforcement Task Force. It's all part of the president's commitment to promote and defend America's Second Amendment rights. Is that kind of what you're seeing here with the administration? They ran on this promise, and now they're, again, it's another promise is kept.
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, President Trump is showing leadership on the issue of the Second Amendment. He made that commitment to America's gun owners, and he's upholding that. And we've seen Attorney General Bondi implementing his request. So the president started with an executive order asking the attorney general to identify policies that need to be rolled back that were restrictive to the Second Amendment under Joe Biden's administration, as well as furthering that. So I think the Second Amendment task force will be a great mechanism to implement those ideas that come out. There is a report that was due to the executive order. It has been completed. It's just not public yet. We're hoping to see that in the very near future. But what you're seeing is some of the critical key components of what gun owners need done, getting done incrementally. They ended zero tolerance. They're looking at the engaged in the business rule. They're looking at getting rid of the brace rule that so many people have had to litigate on. So they're full steam ahead at the Department of Justice and to fix the ATF. And to roll back these policies. And I know there was a change in the leadership at ATF with Acting Director Kash Patel focusing on his full-time job, which is director of the FBI, which is clearly an immense amount of work. And Acting Director Daniel Driscoll is in there. He's also the Secretary of the Army. So NRA hopes that at some point we will have a nominee who is named by the president to be a permanent Senate confirmed director of the ATF that puts the rights of law abiding gun owners first.
John, I know I'm taking away from your family here on Easter Sunday, so I appreciate you taking the time. I got two state specific questions. You started as a state director. Let me first ask you, what's happened with Colorado? Democrat Governor Jared Polis recently signed Senate Bill 3, the most anti-gun, anti-freedom bill in Colorado history. I mean, are they just smoking too much whatever they're smoking, ditch weed in Colorado? What is going on in Colorado?
You know, it is, it's a race to the bottom for these,
yes,
for these misguided states. And Colorado is a huge disappointment in the center of our country. I mean, there's great law-abiding Americans who live in Colorado. It's a beautiful place, just full of bad ideas. And the transplants that have moved into Colorado are electing the wrong people. And we're seeing that. Elections have consequences.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the radical left has made a lot of inroads in Colorado from what the state used to be. So, you know, what this amounts to is they were running on basically a full gun ban, and then Governor Polis decided it was a better idea to create the Polis permission slip. So you need to bend a knee, fill out a permission slip, and get his approval before you can exercise your Second Amendment rights now in Colorado. And it's a similar model. He learned it from Maryland and New Jersey and Illinois. But you have to pay a fee, go through the process, get your permit that he approves, and then you can attempt to buy a semi-automatic rifle. So it's terrible. We opposed it from the beginning. We're very active there. We had a lot of grassroots support there, and now we're looking at what the legal options are to challenge that.
I was just going to say, I'm assuming that our buddy Travis is going to be fighting that, and I'm sure you guys will sue. Speaking of our buddy Travis, when I was in the legislature, and this goes back, I mean, now we're talking almost 10 years ago, I carried the Eddie Eagle bill here in the Kansas legislature. And for those who don't know the bill, it just aims to enhance student safety by allowing school, doesn't require, but allows school districts to implement standardized firearm safety education programs. And it simply just says, if you see a gun, if you're a kid, you see a gun, stop, don't touch, run away, tell an adult. It's very simple. Eddie Eagle program. They are still trying to get this bill passed through the Kansas legislature. What is the holdup?
Well, yeah, I don't know. It's perplexing to me. This is a common sense program.
Yes.
It's trained millions and millions of America's children to be safe when they encounter a firearm. And again, it's not teaching them how to shoot.
No.
There's
no guns involved.
What to do. If they encounter a firearm, and I think everyone listening can agree that is a good idea. And beyond that, there's other age specific curriculum with that. So it is a great program. Again, the program's reached over 32 million children in all 50 states and Canada and Puerto Rico, and it works. I'm perplexed to this day why this isn't in the statute in Kansas, but. With that said, there's always next year, and we're going to keep pushing for that.
Yeah, well, it would help if we had a governor who wasn't anti-gun and anti-freedom. And John, I appreciate you as always, my friend. If folks want to connect with you, they can find you on X at Jay Comerford. It's Commerford. And online, it's NRAILA.org, correct?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Appreciate you, my friend. Have a happy Easter. Thank you again for joining us this evening.
Same to you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Great interview. It's amazing that the Eddie Eagle bill is still stuck in the Kansas legislature, you know, but again, elections have consequences. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. I want to remind you, you can also listen to us by telling your smart speaker to play KNSS radio. And of course, from breaking news to severe weather updates, just download the Always Live free Odyssey app in order to get started. And of course, while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer in order to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, the United States Constitution affirms the fundamental right of parents to make decisions about their own child's education, health care, and religious upbringing. But this right is now being threatened by many state agencies and courts throughout the country, thanks to a wave of transgender activism. I think we'd be in a worse state, obviously, if Kamala Harris was president, with us now to share some of the stories that we're seeing out of some of these radical states is my next guest, who can give us kind of a firsthand, shall we say, a warning, shall we say, is Edward Bartlett. He is founder of SAVE, which is an organization focused on fairness and due process on college campuses. Edward, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you with us this evening, and happy Easter, my friend.
And happy Easter to yourself, John.
So, you know, the first one that comes to mind is this, the case, and I saw a story on this not too long ago, Jeff Younger. He's the Texas father who lost his years-long battle in the courts to keep his ex-wife from allowing their preteen son, who identifies as a girl named now Luna, to receive gender-affirming care. And I've seen this guy. I've seen him talk to the press. I've seen some interviews with him. And it's interesting because when he talks to his son, the boy's like, well, mommy wants me to do this, and mommy wants me to be a girl, and so since mommy wants this, I do this. But it seems like it's really the mother that's pressing this, and yet even in a conservative, deep red state like Texas, they're allowing it.
Yeah, when people talk about the transgenderism and the transgender threat to society, people tend to think of about women's sports. And of course, yes, that is a serious threat. But I would argue that the far greater threat is the threat that transgenderism poses to the nuclear family.
Yes.
And the rights of parents to exercise their constitutionally affirmed rights to oversee the upbringing of their own children. And you're right about Texas. That is a surprise decision. But we have to realize that every court around the country, in a sense, in many ways, is reigns over its own. It has its own previous decisions. It has its own personalities, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So every district court has, I believe, about 15 or 20 different judges, and that judge is the judge for a given case is selected at random generally, and it's you have no idea what the luck of the draw is going to be for a given case.
Yeah, and if the legislature hasn't passed a law that specifically protects or gives, in this case, parental rights, well, then it's up to a judge. And if you happen to get an activist, well, then this is what happens. You've got the other case that I read the other day, Jeremy and Mary Cox. This is an Indiana couple who lost custody of their trans teen when the Department of Child Services recommended, again, to a county judge that the teen be placed in a home that, quote, affirms the kid's identity. I mean, here you literally have the county judge taking away the parent's child, all because this teen is choosing another identity. I mean, again, this is it reeks of governmental overreach to me.
Well, absolutely, yes. And it really speaks to the assault, the cultural assault that we are seeing around our country right now in many different areas. And I think actually the worst example of this whole phenomenon is in the state of Colorado.
Yes.
They're actually looking, they're debating a bill right now. It's HB 251312. And it basically, they have not passed this bill, but it's so crazy. I'll tell you what it says. It says it doesn't matter what the child wants if the child wants to change their pronouns. It's if the other parent insists that the child, in fact, is, the wrong biology and the wrong body or whatever. That if the other parent contests that proposition, that other parent can be charged with coercive control. So, and of course, coercive control is now considered a form of domestic abuse.
Right,
so,
parental abuse.
Right. So we're looking at a cancer in our society. It's a cancer with many different tentacles going in many different directions, women's sports being one of them, You know, the pronoun debates in schools is another one of them. And there's so many horror stories, and I'll tell you one of them. This involved a teenage girl in the state of Virginia. And one day she decided that she really thought she was a boy now. She started using the boys' bathroom, and, well, the boys were not too thrilled with that. She dropped out of school. She got caught up in a sex trafficking ring.
Oh, boy.
She was taken to Maryland, later ended up in Texas. And of course, all of this was kept secret from the parents, right?
Ugh.
Parents were, you know, they knew that she was not in school, but she didn't know the details of this. But finally, the parents caught up with her in Texas, brought her back, and now the parents have sued the school for keeping the parents in the dark. So this truly is a cancer that has so many horrible different outcomes.
We're talking with Edward Bartlett, founder of SAVE, which is an organization focused on fairness and due process on college campuses. You mentioned the bill in Colorado, the HB 25-1312. You know, one of the aspects of that I find most shocking, it's the bill that one parent can declare that their child is LGBTQ or transgender or whatever, and then accuse the other parent of abuse or coercive control. One of the elements of that I find so shocking is even if the child never expresses that identity themselves, the kid doesn't even have to say they're LGBT. One parent can say it, and therefore it just is. I mean, this, it's so vile. It's so invasive. It's so precludes parental rights. And yet, it's just pandering to this minority, this woke minority. And yet, it's already passed through the Colorado House, and it's now sitting in the Colorado Senate, correct?
Correct. It has not been enacted into law. That's part of the reason why we decided to publicize this insanity in our press release, because, I mean, every citizen in Colorado that has half a brain to speak out against.
Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that it's Orwellian in its nature. I mentioned SAVE, your organization. SAVE stands for Stop Abusive and Violent Environments. Can you tell us a little bit about it? If folks were interested, if they want to help, if they want to get involved, if they want more information.
Yeah, sure. So here's our website address is SAVEServices.org, SAVEServices.org. We used to be focused primarily on campus due process, you know, male students being falsely accused of sexual misconduct. But with this new Title IX regulation that Biden was pushing, we just had decided we had to broaden our focus to the basically the weaponization of Title IX. And we actually did succeed in blocking that regulation. It was rescinded. It was blocked by a judge from Kentucky. But that doesn't mean all that the activists at the state levels
right.
have stopped their stuff. They are continuing their hard work.
Well, one of the things that I appreciate that you're doing is it's not only the students. You also work to assure that faculty members are afforded their constitutional protections, because I've heard stories of faculty members that have been retaliated against by their institution, by their employers, basically, for standing up for this. And I think that's something that people forget here is, you know, there are teachers. We've had a case here in Kansas where a teacher was fired because they refused to comply. They wanted to tell parents about what was going on. And that's part of the insidious nature of this whole left-wing trans movement.
Yeah, I've been told, and I think this is a correct figure, there are 12 million children right now in the U.S. that are attending schools that have these secrecy policies.
Yep.
Secrecy meaning that the parents are kept in the dark about anything related to transgender, you know, discussions with their own child. 12 million children in such schools. So this is really widespread. Pretty much, you know, we've looked at some states. You know, we think pretty much every state has at least one or two school districts. So, yeah, it is a cancer in our society. You mentioned about faculty members. Yes, there was actually a case in Ohio where a faculty member refused to use the gender pronouns of a student, and the faculty member was actually disciplined. The faculty member fought back and actually filed a lawsuit. I think he won $500,000 eventually, yep. But it's just the kind of insanity that's happening, and it's going to get worse if we just continue to sort of let things slide along.
We had the same case in Kansas where the same thing happened and the faculty member won. Edward, I appreciate you again. If folks are interested, the organization is SAVE, and if people are interested and they want more information, it's saveservices.org. Thank you again, my friend. I hope you had a very happy Easter. I appreciate you joining us. Thank you again, my friend.
Thanks so much, John. Be in touch.
Thank you, sir. We'll take a quick break. Studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. I want to remind you about my friends at Americans for Prosperity. Every week, AFP is engaging folks all across the state on issues that matter to you. Folks, you have the power to change the trajectory of our city and our state. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up today. So, you know, I got to address something that came out. This came out, let's see, about a week ago. Phil, I don't know if you saw this. This was a story that the mayor, Mayor Lily Wu, shared, and it was about some emails that she got. I mean, this whole Transgender Day proclamation, the left has been enjoying it, relishing it. The Wichita Eagles, I mean, they're actually probably selling newspapers for a change, trying to get coverage out of this. But so Mayor Wu shared some emails that she received. Did you see the posts that she?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and I can't read all of it because it was vulgar, but I can read some of it. This email was sent to her on Friday, April 11th, to Lily Wu, L Wu at, and her email address. Subject re Sheena, Shina. And it says Sheena Chink. So, you know, racist. Starts off right there, racist. Love, peace, hope, and happiness. So typical liberals there, the tolerant left for you. Transphobic, racist, you're done. Go back to Guatemala where you effing belong. Don't you ever run for mayor again, because you may be deported. Hey, here comes Ice Ice Baby. Love, peace, hope, and happiness. Yeah, this is the left for you. Now, don't get me wrong. If you're trans, if you're whatever, if you disagree, I trust me, I got death threats when I was in the legislature. I got people mad at me for some of my votes. If you want to disagree with her, disagree with her.
Yeah. You're more than welcome.
Absolutely. This is vile and disgusting. But you know what else is vile and disgusting? I've not heard a single Democrat come out and condemn this.
No.
Where's Brandon Johnson? Where's Maggie Ballard? Where's the Democrats on the city council? How come they're not condemning? Where's Hoheisel? How come he's not condemning this?
I follow Lily Wu's Facebook page, and it's maybe not quite as bad because Facebook, of course, has some.
I'd block every one of these. I would block all this crap if I were her.
I see what she deals with from Facebook.
This is the open disrespect for her. And I mean, it's just, this is disgusting. that you would put this at, and the silence from the left
is
on this is deafening. And frankly, it's also very telling. And I think that's the sad part in all of this, is how silent the folks on that side of the aisle are. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll play my interview with Riley Gaines from a couple weeks ago. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.